This is The Takeout.
Ask not what your country can do for you.
With Major Garrett.
Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall.
At this defining moment, change has come to America.
And we will make America great again.
Wow, we have never done this before. Take The Takeout to the White House Correspondents' Dinner, and that's exactly what we have done. And just for you, our faithful and loyal listeners, thank you so much for being with us. We're going to, as we indicated in episode 15, deluge you this week. Isn't that a great word, deluge you? It's like Joe Pesci or something, right?
Deluge.
We're going to deluge you with content all week. And to help us do that or kick this off, Jeffrey Goldberg, a great friend of mine, a fantastic journalist, also the editor-in-chief of Atlantic Magazine. So
chief.
I'm the chief White House correspondent. You're editor-in-chief.
I'm chief of nothing.
I think my chief is...
Two chiefs for the price of one.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, and
yeah.
It's the best price in America for podcasting. Don't you think, Steve Shigaris?
I'm chief of nothing, Major.
You are chief...
Of nothing.
No.
But it's good to be...
You're the major,
chief. Shigaris is the world's greatest podcast sidekick. And you're chief of that.
Wait.
So there you go.
How many podcast sidekicks are there in America?
One.
That's,
one.
Yeah, that's,
that's
what
why
I'm
he's the world's best.
Yeah. Asking
exactly.
the tough
no
questions.
Argument.
I just want to ask the tough questions.
So, Jeffrey, let's talk about gluttony.
Yeah.
As many deadly sins as we can get to in 5 minutes.
I want to talk about tuxedos and hypocrisy and the decline and fall of Western civilization.
Go. You've got 60 seconds.
Nah, forget it. Let's just talk about the party. Let's just talk about this great party that we're at. Or you talk about whatever you want. You're the chief. He's the chief.
You're both the chief. Where's Atlantic Magazine right now? Are you in
transition?
We're
at the White House Correspondents' Association.
As a magazine, are you in transition like so much of the media is, trying to find an audience, trying to live in the digital space, trying to preserve what you... A long
well,
and distinguished
we're
history.
A 160-year-old magazine
exactly.
with a huge digital presence, so it's kind of we're straddling both worlds. You
remind our listeners some of the immortal authors who have written for Atlantic.
Well, you know, the greatest mic drop in Atlantic history, the Battle Hymn of the Republic.
There you go.
I think that was the and we by the way, we paid $4.
There you
four
go.
$4. Julia Ward Howe, Battle Hymn of the Republic. I usually, you know, you could usually end a conversation with that. But no, it's been throughout. I mean, we've had Teddy Roosevelt and Woodrow Wilson write. Nathaniel Hawthorne wrote, was a Civil War correspondent for The Atlantic, founded by Ralph Waldo Emerson, Harriet Beecher Stowe. I mean, it's a big crew, you know, all the way up to people like Jim Fallows and Ta-Nehisi Coates, you know, where we try to stay big, stay big in the space.
If you're thinking about a magazine that has chronicled the American experience continuously and with some of the most beautiful and respected luminaries in journalism and writing, it's The Atlantic.
I'll keep going. So this is really good.
You know, Atlantic is kind
gonna,
of like the print
edition.
How much
is your
paying?
So Atlantic
this.
Is kind
this
of
is
like
great.
The print
this
edition.
All right,
we'll
print his story. Fine, we'll
so
print
how do you get a subscription?
Fine.
It's kind of like the print equivalent of CBS News, don't you think?
Well, you know what? I think quality seeks quality, and that's why we're doing
this
podcast.
Has nothing to do with
the greatest podcast in American history.
Has nothing to do with
the number one podcast during
the
Civil War. People don't know that. They don't know that.
Yes, this was the number one podcast during the Civil War. It was huge.
And you were the number one Civil War sidekick podcast host.
Oh, yes, yes.
Yes.
Absolutely. Yeah, this is content, boy. This is some content.
Our listeners
here.
Are so
I'm
lucky.
Loving I'm digging this content.
Yes,
this is
yes.
serious.
Steve Shigaris was the Stonewall Jackson of podcasting in the Civil War.
Hey, he was on the wrong side of the podcasting war. All right.
But, Grant. We're going to do an open mic thing here. So we have producers circulating through the CBS Atlantic Monthly Magazine pre-party for the White House Correspondents' Dinner.
Yes, we do.
And when we... Cadge, really cool guest. We're going to run right up
wow.
to the mic and deluge
C-A-D-G-E,
people with what we
Cadge.
You know,
see?
That was a that briefly was a nickname of mine.
Cadge?
Yes.
The deluge of cadginess.
In what respect is it somebody misspelled my last name?
They went from Shigaris
to
Cadge?
Cadge, and it became a thing
okay.
for Shigaris. A couple of years.
I like that.
Weird?
Cadge?
What other big words do you
it was
use?
It was an autocorrect thing,
that's
I believe.
That's it. I deluge
have you run
and
out,
Cadge.
Have you run out of big
I'm
words
done.
Now?
Exactly.
All right, good.
Give
we
me
can
three
go
more
on
gin
now.
And tonics. I might find
well,
one
we will.
More.
We have a lot of people running around.
You didn't front load for this podcast, did you?
I front load for everything, Jeffrey Goldberg. Don't you doubt it for a second, okay?
Air Force One, here he comes. Oh, my God.
So, from your vantage point, you have talked to presidents throughout your career.
Yes.
What is your just general, non-editorial evaluation about the first 100 days of Trump presidency?
simultaneously a kind of slow rolling disaster, but not the disaster that people thought.
Or maybe feared.
People feared. I mean, we're in a process of a little bit of normalization right now, that the behaviors generally seem to be more in line with what we expect in a presidency. But on the other hand, the learning curve here is steep, and it has not been surmounted. And they haven't actually achieved anything.
And yet Trump voters are okay and willing to wait for more.
They are fantastically loyal people. They are fantastically loyal people, but you wonder how long that's going to last.
Right, I mean, it is only 100 days, right?
Right. How many more days is there more? There are more days than this, right?
A couple more than 100, yes.
Wait, you're bringing the whole Atlantic here. Yes. Look at this. This is fantastic. I love it. I don't know. What do you make of it, Major?
Well, it's been very hectic, and there is a process by which every administration goes through. The Obama administration went through it. Clinton went through it. Bush went through it. But right. It has been more public, more up and down, and certainly filled with more immediate and vicious rivalries.
I would argue than I've ever seen.
Kremlinology is interesting here. More scrutinized. And I use that advisedly.
Yes.
More scrutinized.
Certainly more scrutiny.
Now, come on.
You don't think so? No, I'm not saying that as a criticism. I'm saying it because he's invited
There's more look-in. There's a bigger look-in audience for this reality TV show.
Sure, but I think that's more the product of where we are in social media. And
somebody's at the open mic. Who is that?
Oh, hello.
Amazing person.
I'm just a little street urchin who came in from the gutter.
Like so many others at the White House Correspondents' Dinner. Isn't that what the Correspondents' Dinner does? Collect street urchins, bring them in?
No, I'm not like one of the scholarship kids. I'm a dangerous criminal.
And remember, it's all about the scholarships.
Introduce yourself, please, and open the microphone.
Hello, this is Molly Ball
from
The Atlantic, here with my boss, Jeff Goldberg.
We're colleagues. My former colleague, yes.
I will say we have now traversed into the Molly Ball Show.
Yes.
I just would hope one day you get your own show and we can call it the Molly Ball Show. I don't know.
I adore Molly Ball. It would get canceled so fast because I would get myself in trouble. Wait, I thought you were going to ask her a series of hard questions, but all you're doing is kind of just sucking up the Molly Ball.
Bring them on.
Anyway.
Molly, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me. It's great to have you at our party, at our open mic for the Takeout podcast.
Cheers. Let's clink those glasses. So this is an act of public corporate gluttony, Atlantic and CBS, making waves here at the Correspondents' Dinner. A much more relaxed affair, it seems to me.
Oh, it's totally chill.
It's so much more fun.
Yeah,
without all the traffic, without all the security, all the heavy of the Secret Service.
I mean, and it's a little early to judge. It's a lot easier to get here. A lot easier.
Yeah, and everybody seems more chill.
You can definitely get an Uber.
But you're always chill.
It's my job to form extremely judgmental opinions based on a very small amount of evidence.
That's what we teach him at The Atlantic.
Exactly.
Right? That's where we're going.
You got that from CBS, right?
That's my take, and I'm sticking with it.
The hottest take. 160 years of hot takes.
Is that what Ralph Waldo Emerson?
You know, he was so into the hot takes.
He was. That was the original slogan.
He was crazy with the hot takes. Yeah, it is chill.
Got great traffic.
It is chill. It is very chill, I think. It's going to be more chill and possibly more fun. Because there's no tension.
There's much less tension.
And all the celebrity crap.
The celebrification has gone way down.
I hate the celebrity.
Oh, I love the celebrity crap.
Really?
I walked into this CBS Atlantic party last year. Morgan Freeman standing in the middle of the room, went up, said hello, got a picture, saw Aretha Franklin on a couch, said, I like your music, or some idiotic thing that you say when you meet Aretha.
And then I thought, you know what?
I'm going to go home. I did it. 10 minutes.
How does it get better
in
than
and
that?
Out, no one gets
that's
hurt.
That's true.
So now, you're better than Morgan Freeman.
Last year or the year before, I got to take a selfie with Lena Dunham, which was like, I could die happy.
There you go.
You're right. There is an upside to the celebrity.
My best White House Correspondents' Dinner experience is at this party. Several years ago, I was among the last people to make it into the dining room, and there was a guy over in the corner, and I wanted to make sure he didn't need to be directed toward the ballroom. It was David Byrne.
David Byrne,
Talking Heads, okay?
Yeah, oh, my God.
He was so cool, so relaxed.
Oh,
we had a 15-minute
conversation.
And obviously
lost-looking, a bit lost.
So I'm a David Byrne super fan.
About music.
He has a foundation that's dedicated to spreading the gospel of transcendental meditation, to children. Yeah, so that's why he's so chill.
That he's very chill. He was so mellow. And we had
this
a great conversation.
Becoming a very spiritual totally podcast.
By the way, do you know the David Byrne story about what he did before Talking Heads when he was
trying to make
a name for himself? This is a great story.
Can I say one thing and then I want to hear your story? Look at a picture of Charlie Crist next to a picture of David Byrne.
Oh, there's
similarities. You'll never look at either of those.
Separated at Byrne.
David Byrne now. Right?
Yeah.
Not David Byrne back in the day.
And Charlie Crist once got in trouble for using an unlicensed Talking Heads song in a campaign spot and had to make a videotaped apology to David Byrne.
Interest to himself.
All right, Shaggy, what's
the story? So I'm asking, what's the theme of this podcast?
We have no idea.
Ralph Waldo Emerson's Transcendental Meditation, David Byrne, what are we doing?
Hot takes.
The hottest of the hot takes.
So David Byrne, after he graduated from college, got to New York, was trying to make a name for himself. He would go to these coffee houses and do open mic night, poetry slams or whatever. And the thing that he would do is he would watch a specific TV show, transcribe it, and then do a dramatic reading of this specific television show.
And cool what show was it?
The Price is Right.
There we go.
A
dramatic
David
reading of The Price is Right. Bob Barker.
That's right.
Bob Barker needs a dramatic reading. Right. If anyone needs a dramatic reading, it's Bob Barker.
Good stuff.
Molly, so what are you working on? What's interesting to you
now? Don't tell him.
As a journalist.
Don't tell him what you're working on.
I'm sorry. I was under the impression I was at a party.
Oh, come on.
I'm not, like, covering this.
No, not this. This is clearly not interesting.
But I am writing articles about American politics
that
I certainly cannot tell you about before they're finished.
I don't mean it. I just mean what's generally
I'm having a suppressing effect on this conversation.
You are.
Sorry.
That's like the furrowed brow of the boss if I've ever seen it.
No, it's fine. But Molly, you know, Molly drops these bombs, and we want those bombs to go off and, you know, in a big way.
And then we all skitter and try to understand what the bomb damage assessment is. We do a BDA. We do a journalistic BDA on that, don't we?
Exactly. What is that?
A bomb damage assessment.
Oh, okay. Or the Pentagon, they'll tell you.
Yeah. I'm not covering the Pentagon.
Okay.
I can tell you that much.
So, Molly, this is how this works. The open mic is now closed. Got to go.
Okay.
We got another guest right behind
lines.
You.
Wait a sec.
Lines and lines of people.
The lines are moving.
Do not treat my people this way.
Thank you, Molly.
Do not treat my people this way.
That was fun and relatively painless. Thank you,
relatively painless.
Thanks for joining us.
That's what we are at the Takeout. Relatively painless.
Wait, is that your theme song? Relatively painless.
Relatively painless.
A relatively painless podcast.
D, approach the microphone. Approaching the microphone here on open mic night at the White House Correspondents' Dinner at this edition of The Takeout, or with this edition of The Takeout. Guest of ours, episode 2 of
episode
this fast-growing podcast,
Wait, what
Deborah
is this?
Smith. We don't recognize
this
one.
Is this the 15th
one.
And last?
No. We had the 15th on Thursday.
Okay.
So Deborah Smith is getting his earbuds in.
I went to law school.
That's right.
I can barely handle these. How are you guys?
There we go. Deborah Smith is, if you don't know and if you don't remember, our loyal and dear and cherished podcast listeners, the executive director of the National Football League Players Association.
Were you in Philadelphia this week?
I was. I came
so,
back.
So, D, get right up on that microphone.
Right here.
You remember.
You can hear me? Happy, happy White House Correspondents' Dinner, everyone.
Great to have you at open mic.
I was, I came back early Thursday morning. I never stay for the actual draft.
You don't?
No. I kind of know what's going to happen, so...
Yeah,
we just kind of enjoy
drafted.
It. Yeah,
what else is there?
Well, and I wasn't picked, so
you wanted to be.
What's your 40 time, Dee?
Right now, about 11 seconds to the 10-yard marker.
Jeffrey Goldberg, what's your 40 time?
What?
What's your 40 time?
Oh, come
40
on.
Yards.
17 minutes,
44 seconds. Very nice.
In my car.
Deborah Smith, you know Jeffrey Goldberg, Atlantic,
editor-in-chief.
So you're in the presence of two chiefs. I just want you to know that.
Wow.
Totally
chief White House correspondent, editor-in-chief.
Wow.
So,
Are you
I would go down on a bended knee, except I couldn't get back up.
That's right. Neither could anything went out of us.
How
exactly.
intimidated are you right now on a scale of 0 to 0?
0. How intimidating are we?
Boy.
Very.
So, you having a good time? You digging this?
I do. This is fantastic. This is my first White House Correspondents' Dinner. And
oh, really?
Thank you to the wonderful people at CBS for the nice invitation. And
hey, you're drinking the Atlantic's liquor,
cocktail.
Too.
Right,
exactly. Noting
for the record.
Thank you for the vodka.
Right.
Yeah. Hey, thanks for coming.
So,
I'm a little surprised.
So what CBS did is they provided the microphones. Atlantic Media provided the electricity.
Okay,
there
you go.
Our
interns
are
in the basement on those bicycles generating all the power for this podcast.
So actually, you're the chief.
No, the chief. Well, he's a chief. I'm a chief. We're all chiefs.
We're all cheap. They need a lime.
A lime. I'm sorry. I would have brought you one.
Where's the lime in my gin and tonic?
I would have brought you one. Cheers.
Well, welcome
Cheers.
To our new Cheers. Podcast, I Need a Lime, with Major Garrett.
Boy, do I ever need a lime.
Yeah, I need a lime.
You had a question. You were going to throw me
Shaggy,
some,
go with the question.
Some really hard, hard-hitting question.
The world's greatest podcast sidekick.
How about your take on the draft?
My favorite part of the draft was that the number one pick, Myles Garrett, decided not to be in Philadelphia and to be with the NFLPA with his family.
Beautiful.
So we threw a event for him where it was his own draft experience and covered by Sports Illustrated and others. That was my favorite part of the draft.
And my favorite part is his last name.
Wow.
Garrett.
Oh, wow.
Myles Garrett.
Yeah. Wow.
Let's go. Come on now. Come on.
Hot Mike.
Come on.
Wow.
How much better than that?
Hey, yeah. You're a news guy, right? Yeah. You don't do comedy? Really? That's odd.
Yeah. I really don't do comedy.
I didn't see that coming.
What do you think of the White House Correspondents Association dinner? Do you have any opinions?
I was born and raised in D.C.
Where
in D.C.? So there's a certain grew up in Savannah Terrace right off of Alabama Avenue.
Okay.
I mean, this is a part of Washington that is, I think, beautiful, wonderful, celebrates the First Amendment. I think it's a shame that our president didn't come.
Right.
His choice. But I
or
think that,
is it? Or is but, it?
No, no.
Wow.
The Correspondents Association, I'll speak for that because I used to be on the board, always wants every president to be there. It's the president's choice. The Correspondents Association always wants every sitting president to be here. They're always invited, always will be invited. It's President Schultz's
choice
not only not to be here, but to counter-program against it. That's his right. It's his privilege. He'll be invited next year, I guarantee you.
Well, and
every year.
And for me, just forget about football for a second. You guys, the Fifth Estate, has such an important role as a check on our democracy. And I think that it's an important event to celebrate. And not to get too heavy, but I think it's a mistake not to come.
It would have been odd, I would say, it would have been odd to have a president who is intermittently waging a kind of battle against the legitimacy of the press to come to this. It would have been a more of a tension-filled news event, I think.
Of course. But, and look, I can write the speech he's going to give tonight. I told you all during the campaign, I'm with you, not with them. Where are they tonight? They're all wearing tuxedos. Where am I? I'm with you. I'm here in Harrisburg.
Right.
We're together. Isn't this great? Right. Isn't this the greatest place in America to be? Not with all those tuxedo journalists you know, celebrating each other. I literally can write his speech.
Well, and
right
at what time isn't a moment when Roger and I are together? At what point isn't that odd?
Right.
So we do it.
Roger Goodell, the commissioner of the National Football League.
Well, I was just back
the second most powerful person in America.
And as a surprise, we have Roger Goodell right here.
Don't say that in front of D. Please.
I just wanted your reaction, brother, at the open mic.
We're not on camera, right?
Hey, can I ask you a question?
Well, we're sort of on camera.
It was fantastic.
What's your take on what's happening at ESPN right now?
I think two things. One,
he always brings the rain.
I know. Two things. One, I feel sorry for a lot of really great people who lost their jobs. I think that's awful. But I also think that when it comes to the economics of what's happening in sports these days, there's going to be a tremendous amount of consolidation. I think where I spend my time is looking at where media is going to be in 2025, and it's not going to look like this. So
what do you think it's going to look like?
I think at the end of the day, we're starting to see the first wave.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Right.
And the bubble's bursting.
The fact of the matter is, not to get too technical, and this isn't even technical at all, the cable part of the sports package is different now than it was 10 years
ago.
And cord cutters are not even people like cord. What is the cord? Right. I just want to stream my content and skip that whole intermediary, and that was ESPN's revenue source. It's bread and butter.
And
the revenue that it gave it to buy all sorts of other sports programming, and they've got to adjust to the realities of that new marketplace.
Well, and they're also a piece of a much larger media conglomerate, right? And so that has really had more of an impact, I think, than anything else. So, look, we're living in a world where sports has only a small impact on the overall bottom line of a very large corporation.
Excellent. D, thank you for your
time.
Thank
you, guys.
Thanks for stopping by for a drink.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for episode two. You got us off to an unbelievable start with the Takeout Podcast.
I'm sure that had nothing to do with me. Nobody else.
A lot to do with you.
Come on, please.
Thanks.
Bring it to the microphone. Open mic now.
I can't.
The very first actor we have ever had on the Takeout Podcast. The very first actor, and an actor that, in my mind, in the minds of many people, come right to the microphone, is immortal for one of the most memorable John Hughes movies ever shot, ever directed, ever written, Ferris Bueller's Day Off, coming to the Takeout Podcast, Hot Mike, Cameron.
Alan Ruck, ladies
and
gentlemen.
Alan Ruck, who played Cameron
so before
in Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
Before I obsess about Ferris Bueller's Day Off, which I have seen hundreds.
We're all going to obsess about it. Times. We're all going to obsess.
Say hello, Alan.
Hi guys.
Rock.
Hi everybody.
Thanks
come
for joining
right to
us.
The mic. Come right to the mic.
Come right to the mic.
No, get right on top of it.
Oh, I really like
there,
this.
There you go.
Talk to us.
You
got
to eat it.
Talk to us briefly about what you're doing now. I don't want to forget that.
So. I'm just here shamelessly hawking a movie.
Yes,
it's called War Machine. It's a Brad Pitt movie and.
Netflix, right?
Netflix, absolutely. It's going to be released the 26th of May, and it's loosely based on a book called The Operators
by
Michael Hastings.
Yeah. Oh yes, Michael Hastings.
He was
incredible writer.
He's no longer
journalist.
With us, but he was the reporter that was embedded with Stanley McChrystal in Afghanistan,
right?
So it's a really dark comedy. It starts out kind of surprisingly funny, and then gets quite dark. Toward the end, but it's a really terrific.
Speaking of something that gets,
I fooled them all into thinking that I was a grown-up, and I play the ambassador to Afghanistan.
Wow. Nice.
Yeah, yeah.
Amazing.
But anyway, I got away with it.
Excellent. Meet Jeffrey Goldberg, the editor-in-chief of the Atlantic Magazine.
How are you, sir?
Joining us at Open Mic.
I've read your publication.
Good.
And I've enjoyed it.
Well, that's even better.
This is Major Garrett.
Are you familiar with the work
Chief
of CBS?
Chief White House correspondent of CBS News.
Have you
I'm
heard
Steve
of him?
Harris, the political director.
Pleasure.
Yeah.
Thanks for joining us.
My pleasure.
So.
Yeah.
Let's just talk for a minute and gleefully.
Can we just talk about Afghanistan?
No, no.
For 20
we're going to get to Afghanistan, but first we're going to gleefully obsess over Ferris Bueller's Day Off.
All right.
A movie actually more about Cameron than Ferris.
Well, that's true. By the way, I was hoping you could wear your Gordie Howe jersey tonight.
I'm sorry.
Detroit Red Wings.
They wouldn't let me in.
Right, exactly. Right. It's more about. Isn't that the essence of the movie?
Well, I mean, when I got that part, I mean, Broderick and I were already friends. We were doing a play together
Matthew
in
Broderick,
New York.
Right?
Yeah.
Biloxi Blues, if I'm
not mistaken. Yeah, exactly. And when I read the script, I thought, well, Cameron is the one with the problem. That's where the dramatic...
Right, that's the tension.
Tension is. So, you know, I mean, he was the movie star and I was the sidekick, but it was more about Cameron.
Cameron's struggles and the struggles of high school age, girls and boys.
Families. Yeah.
Isolation.
Yeah.
A sense of not knowing what your future or destiny is.
All that stuff.
All of that.
Yeah.
Huge themes. But told... masterfully, I think, through Ferris and Cameron. You got to have both.
Well, you know, Ferris was a really good guy because he instead of just blowing off the day and making out with his beautiful girlfriend, he came
totally an option.
And he fetched his hypochondriac friend and showed him a good time,
mm-hmm.
you know, and tried to cheer him up. So he's a good guy.
What was it like? How fun was that doing that movie?
Well, I had a ball. I started out acting in Chicago, and I went away to New York to do Biloxi Blues, and... I got that picture, and I kind of felt like I was going home a big shot, you know. So it was a wonderful time in my life.
Let us in on a little secret. You were playing a 17-year-old man.
Yeah, 18.
And how old were you?
I was 29.
Yeah. But we wouldn't know it. You look like you were 18.
I always tell everybody when I was really 17, I looked like a fetus. So
well, there you go. Yeah.
So now he's got like a little Civil War general.
Yeah, he does.
I just don't want to shave.
Yeah.
I don't have to.
No, it's good.
You look like James Longstreet.
Okay.
Here's a random question for you, and you've probably
who's
been asked
the one that kept his arm in the air when he rode?
Stonewall Jackson.
Stonewall.
Oh, Stonewall. Yeah. Okay. Stonewall.
What do you think Cameron's doing now?
I think he's probably on his second or third marriage. I think, you know, he's probably in a 12-step program.
Does he or does he not have a sports car?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Totally.
Definitely.
Just like his dad.
But not a Ferrari. Right.
So this is the question that actors are always asked after a movie becomes not only a huge hit, but like a generational anthem. And I think it's fair to say that for people of a certain age, Ferris Bueller's Day Off is a generational anthem.
I think that's fair, yeah.
Did you have any sense of that when you guys were putting that movie in the can?
Thank you. No, I did not at all. In fact, Jennifer Grey and I and Mia Sara and a couple other people went to the old Gulf and Western building in New York. And we saw a rough cut of it about 4 months before it came out. We were all mortified. We were sure it was going to tank.
Really?
But actors, you know, you only watch yourself, you know. You never see.
And you see all the flaws.
Can I ask you a question? The script that you read for the part was completely different than what showed up on film, correct?
There were a few things that were different. There were some scenes that never got shot that would have been fun, but the movie would have been too long. We were supposed to go to a strip club. And Cameron was supposed to fall in love with one of the girls, you know. And Ferris was supposed to basically drag him out, kicking and screaming.
What about Charlie Sheen? Was he supposed to be a bigger part of that movie?
No. He just showed up for that bit,
But, a solid bit, though.
Oh, yeah. I mean, amazing, yeah. And I worked... The next movie I did was with Charlie, and nobody's ever seen it, and it's okay if nobody ever sees it.
I want to go find that now.
Yeah, what's it called?
What's it called?
Three for the Road.
Three for the Road, okay.
Might watch it instead of going to dinner.
I was with Charlie.
Actually, kind of the theme for our night, Three for the Road, don't you think?
I guess so, yeah.
tying it on anyway, here at a fast pace.
And another question actors get put to them a lot, film, Broadway, or live theater?
You know, whoever came up with the idea of 8 shows in 7 days, I'm sure they're dead now. It's one of those people you'd like to bring back to life so you could slap the hell out of them. Like, what were you thinking? More shows than our days in a week, you know?
Right.
If I ever do a play again, it'll have to be pretty special. The last one I did was 11 years ago. I met my wife. That was the best thing that happened, you know? And I love working in film and TV. It's a little more civilized.
Right. I mean, Pacino has said that the difference is live theater is you're walking out on a high wire. And as soon as you take that first step, you can't go back.
No, you're on your own. Yeah.
You're totally on your own. And that's what he loves. He says that's what he loves about it. Does movies, obviously does great movies, but loves theater because it's the perpetual high wire act once that curtain goes
right.
up.
Right. It's all up to you, you know, good or bad. If I ever do a play again, I kind of hope it's in Chicago. I have a lot of friends there that still do theater. My friend Bob Falls runs the Goodman Theater. I just saw a production of Uncle Vanya there. You know, and they don't do 8 shows a week. They do 6. You know,
it's like 6 doable.
They couldn't hack 8.
I can get next to that. No, I'm I don't have the legs for it anymore. After a while, you just give out, you know?
Jeffrey, anything you want to ask this amazing actor?
I want to ask about the White House Correspondents Association dinner.
About what?
The White House Correspondents Association dinner.
This
have
dinner.
You ever been?
Ask away. No, I've never been, no.
I'm wondering what you think about this year as opposed to what you've heard about in previous years.
Well,
you rank as one of the biggest celebrities.
I'm trolling. I'm trolling for celebrity endorsement of the First Amendment. Do you get that?
It's nice. It's going to be a one-sided fight.
Might very well be, One of the sides chose not to come.
I got to meet Senator Warner today, and some very smart young man was talking next to him, said, he thought the best thing that could happen was if nobody mentioned Donald Trump's name tonight.
Might happen.
You know?
We'll see. It might happen.
If nobody mentions Donald Trump's name, does he cease to exist?
Well,
think about that.
Yeah.
Or not. Don't think about it.
He will still be the 45th president.
If he falls down in the forest and there's nobody there.
Yeah, but Donald Trump falls in the forest and no one hears him.
He'll make sure everyone knows about it. He'll find a way.
He'll know. We'll know. But we all appreciate people in your profession who actually do come out and support the free press. We really do.
Well,
it's the time.
Without you, we got nothing.
This is the time to do it. This is the time to do it.
Yeah.
I read a story last week on The Long Read, Don Van Atta's thing he puts out every Sunday, all the best long read journalism of that week, and it was a long piece about This is Spinal Tap and the litigation going on over that movie.
Oh, yeah.
And what happened is nobody got paid, even the creators and the writers for This is Spinal Tap. And the underlying premise of this story was, in Hollywood, even with hits, they're always hiding the money. And actors and writers have to fight for that money, even when it's a huge hit.
Yeah.
Ferris Bueller, huge hit. Are you still dining off Ferris Bueller to some degree?
To some degree. I still receive residuals. You know, I mean, I was a little actor from New York, and they got me for a song. But I still, just because the movie's popular, I still get residuals. It's not. I'm not going to buy a house with them, you know, but I mean...
Not a house in Malibu, for sure.
No. But it's definitely helped out along the way. I'm surprised that it's taken the Spinal Tap guys so long to bring this thing to court.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, 30 years.
30 years.
But,
because,
you know,
because what, for our audience,
I think
real
they
quick,
have a shot.
You can find the story, you can, put it in your Google machine, you can find it, but it's a really cool story. Basically, the essence is this. Spinal Tap was a dud in the theaters, but a huge hit on VHS.
Right.
As the actors and the writers now say, it was the first non-porn breakout hit in VHS. And the company that produced it went bankrupt, and the rights to it got handed off and resold. And now they're chasing after the company that currently owns it, and nowhere along the line did any of the writers or creators get compensated for all the money that Spinal Tap has made.
Right.
And that's the essence of it.
Right.
And I learned in that story that big movies, huge movies, still claim they've never made any money.
Yeah.
And the actors shouldn't get paid because it didn't make a net profit and all this other stuff.
It's, you know, the first thing that's taught in Hollywood is creative bookkeeping. And, I think there's always 3 sets of books.
Right.
You know.
A great quote in that article is, they were making money so fast they couldn't hide it fast enough.
That's great.
There
yeah.
you go.
Yeah.
Alan, man,
really
what a
nice
great
to meet
pleasure.
You guys.
Thank you
Thank
so
you
much.
So much,
Alan. By the open mic of the Takeout Podcast at the White House Correspondents'
hey,
Dinner.
Thanks so much
Thank
for
you guys.
Coming.
And you've got a whole phalanx of people behind you who want to meet you and shake your hand.
Hey. We got, you know this guy?
Yes.
You know this guy is? This guy right. is this guy is Pete Dominic from
yes.
Hey, Major, XM, some minor satellite radio company. Very funny
it's
guy.
Sirius XM. Did you include the Sirius? There was a controversial merger exactly. not long ago,
I don't
Jeff.
Remember that. Do
it
you
was
know
in
Major
the papers
Garrett,
and everything,
Pete?
Wasn't it? It was in the papers. The FCC took a look at it. And,
the
and
FTC,
it went through.
What did you just
the
say?
FTC doesn't
you don't
exist
even know the
any
names
longer.
Of government
the FTC has been captured. Yes. No, yeah, Sirius XM.
Right.
Yeah. Non-terrestrial.
Do you know Major Garrett?
Who doesn't know Major Garrett?
He's a major.
He pays attention to politics.
He's a major Garrett.
People have said that his entire life.
Man, they have.
His adolescence. Let's
so
talk about
out.
It, Major. Have you ever opened up to anybody about how the
My
name worked out
this
for
is
you?
A good time.
No,
this
no.
is a good time.
America
I'll just say this. Paint a picture for you real quick. 5 years old, kindergarten. I go to the optometrist. I get glasses. I'm put in front of the class. Everyone, this is Major. He's going to tell us about his glasses. That's how I yeah. started my public school education.
It's amazing that he's
wearing glasses with the name Major, and it went downhill ever so steadily
that
from there.
That sounds similar to the night I lost my virginity, but I don't think that's this type of show, Jeff.
I don't know. This is not my show.
Whose show is this?
This is a Major Garrett show.
Oh, excuse me then. It's definitely not.
All I will say is I was not wearing glasses when I lost my virginity.
Oh, that's good. Yeah. That's good. Well, you look great now. You really hold up. Major Garrett's hair is something we should do a segment about.
He has good hair.
We should do a segment about it.
He has good hair. You should have Major Garrett on your show to talk about his hair. You know, you do have a show, too, right?
Absolutely.
You have a show.
Every day,
what
3 hours a day.
Tell us about your show.
My program is called Stand Up with Pete Dominic, and basically, we talk about all kinds of important issues. It's like NPR with a heartbeat.
Okay. a real pulse.
Yeah,
real pulse.
It's like, right. I love NPR.
It's NPR with
you burn some rubber there,
public
right?
Public interest with an edge.
With a little attitude.
It's uncensored. It's right. not overproduced. But we have experts
Not overproduced.
On.
That not means overproduced.
Just
bothers.
Like this. Just like this.
This show is real. They're bearing down on me the whole time. They keep handing me things. Nothing's
Failing
happening. Guests
pile
like
of garbage.
Jeff Goldberg.
Right. Yeah, he occasionally will have me on.
Yeah.
Comes on. He's always great.
He appears. He does not appear as Jeffrey. Only as Jeff, right? You get street when you're on.
Yeah,
show.
I'll tell you this.
Very street.
Right, extremely street.
I'll tell you this, Major.
Well, you know, people always associate the Atlantic with street.
No question.
Street.
The cred.
Yeah.
You're repping all the time with the Atlantic.
Straight,
a lot of repping.
This is what I'll tell you.
A total amount of repping.
This is what I'll tell you about Jeffrey Goldberg.
Oh, no.
He has not appeared on the show since he became
editor-in-chief. Is that true? Is that a true statement?
Yeah.
Why don't you have me on?
Is he gone too big? Is that what you're saying? Is that the undercurrent?
Right. Did not return my congratulatory text for said promotion.
Yeah, that can't
texted
be.
Him.
It can't
Wait
be.
A minute. Wait a minute. We have uncovered a mini scandal.
It's
you
not
did
true.
Not return not his celebratory text. Oh, there were so many.
By the way,
celebratory
text. Really?
Look, Washington.
So much effort. Into one
Washington
text.
Is full of celebratory, meaningless
well,
texts.
Also full of the...
Hey, good going, my best
oh,
friend.
Congrats.
What does it, what does it mean to do
yeah.
a
we don't
public,
know your name.
Public-private celebration, meaning a public congratulations on Twitter,
right.
then a private text as well? I feel like that says something.
Wow.
So you haven't had me
There's
on the show because you're
I
mad.
Sense a grievance here. We need to reconcile.
Maybe we're just a political divide since you went over to the Trump side.
There needs to be a handshake or a bro hug or something. Come on,
no,
you
I'm
guys
not,
need to.
No, I'm all wired.
Nothing
up.
Will
I'm
ever not. Change between he and I. He is. He made me a man. Jeff
so,
Goldberg.
All right.
No, he just brought.
So we're back to virginity. Now,
let's,
right.
Let's.
No, he invited me to a bar mitzvah.
Let's
hey,
pivot.
David Litt, former Obama speechwriter, knows everything about what's happening tonight.
Yeah, he does.
Very
funny
guy.
Funny or Die, right
yes,
there.
Funny yes, Funny or Die, very important yeah. program.
It's a very, very important program.
Yeah, yeah.
Are you familiar with that, Major?
I am very familiar with
I
that.
Why is he
wandering
Major
off?
Garrett.
Why is he going away from
because
the open mic?
People, when they walk by, they don't know if you're inviting them on or
very
if they're just
inviting.
Saying hello, but this kind, that's that kind of party and show, Major.
So before we dismiss you unceremoniously,
yeah, find something more important.
Yeah, before we dismiss
get,
you
I would get ready to get
dismissed,
by the way. Get ready.
Tell
Prepare
us the funniest
yourself.
Thing you've ever said on your show.
Oh,
dear, the funniest thing I have ever said.
Take
on
a
my
big
program.
Slug of that Heineken before you answer, okay? There you go. That's it.
Hillary Clinton is definitely going to win the election. This is such a ridiculous conversation at this point.
That's a laugh riot.
That's
right
actually
there,
live audio.
Is that, do you have
it's
that?
Over and over.
I
said that over and
I'll
over.
I'll tweet the audio to that.
Dismissive,
over and over
smug,
again.
Liberal prick.
Right.
Yeah.
So yeah. is that your ringtone now?
No, I turned my phone off. No more ringtone.
All right. I'm being yanked. Right. Who's taking me? Thanks, yeah. Major.
Thanks,
good
brother.
To see you, Jeff.
I'm coming open mic like to the takeout.
I'll see you at home.
I would do this all night.
We would do this all night. Rob, who's next? Rob, who's next?
What, your celebrity wrangler is not...
Our celebrity wranglers, they've stopped wrangling? Seriously, they've stopped wrangling?
Do I seriously have to stand here all night and
You do
this?
Not. You can leave anytime you want.
Who do you got?
We have
on the hunt for some people.
Need somebody to take the
hype. But they're not materializing yet.
There's some serious people around here. There's Jeremy Bash. You know,
yeah, there's Jeremy Bash.
Jeremy Bash.
Over here. He works for CNN, but let's get him over here.
Get over here. Okay, all right.
He used to be with the CIA, but now he can talk.
This is open mic at the Takeout podcast.
This could pivot to a serious conversation.
This is a pivot to the serious
about,
conversation.
Intelligence.
Jeremy, we're not violating any contracts here, are we?
I hope not.
Well, I saw Sam earlier.
It's not television.
Because talk about someone who's contracted to the eyeballs. You are contracted to the eyeballs, sir, and all I can say about that is well done.
Thank you.
Jeremy Bash, thank you for joining us at the Takeout Open Mic at the White House Correspondents Dinner. You probably don't even know what the Takeout podcast is.
Well, please, you're standing, sir, you're standing within 15 feet of this table.
I do whatever Jeff and Steve tell me to do.
Exactly.
Let our audience know who you are.
Sure. Jeremy Bash, formerly served in government as chief of staff of the Defense Department and the Central Intelligence Agency. Now I'm a private consultant and an NBC News national security analyst.
Yeah, and
NBC.
That's about as close as NBC is going to get to this podcast.
We're not telling
ever.
NBC.
Can you
any
bleep?
Of this
can you bleep
happening.
Stuff out of a.
I think we can.
You can bleep.
I think it'll just come out as C.
Yeah,
the
exactly.
We'll do the two.
When they yell at you, just tell them you were just promoting
local,
NBC.
Local.
And you were also chief of staff of the House Intelligence Committee.
Chief of counsel for the House Intelligence Committee back in the day of warrantless wiretapping, enhanced interrogation techniques, the Iraq War WMD issue, and the 9/11 reform.
How many unintelligent people have you met in the intelligence business?
That's actually a very good question. I bet you there are a lot.
And we have a related story from this very Takeout podcast, but go ahead.
Intelligence professionals are fallible. I hate to break it to you. They put their pants on one leg at a time. And so sometimes they get it wrong. They do. But actually, it was an issue because when the president actually assailed the intelligence community kind of right when he came in and said these are the same guys that got WMD wrong, it really was a gut punch to a lot of people who try their best to serve the country. Many of them are, you know, dedicating their lives. Some
you
of them risk their lives.
He hasn't done that lately, by
no,
the way.
No, he hasn't. He's back off.
Somebody threw a brushback pitch that worked.
But related to this, Jeremy.
Except I don't know that he still fully embraces their finding about Russian interference.
You know, life is a journey, Jeremy.
Yeah.
Life is
no
doubt.
He'll evolve.
So related to this, just on Thursday at episode 15 of The Takeout, we talked to Will Hurd, who was in the CIA for 9 years, now a member of
Congress. Great
officer. Yeah. And he told us the story, which if you put it in your Google machine, you can find why he ran for Congress. He was a briefer in Afghanistan with the agency.
Yep.
And he had just come off a series of operations because there had been an explosion and deaths to our Afghan partners there in Kabul. First question, he's in his tactical gear. Are you going to cut this short so we can go shopping at the bazaar? That's question one from a member of Congress. And then he starts explaining what's been going on, and the congressman says, hey, what's the difference between Sunni and Shia? And as Will Hurd said on episode 15 of The Takeout, he thought that was a joke. So he said, I don't know, congressman, what is the difference between a Sunni and a Shia? And he didn't know. A 4-year member of the House Intelligence
Committee. I believe it.
Committee. And then Will said... That's when it clicked in my head. I got to maybe, if I'm not doing this for the rest of my life, maybe I ought to do that and help these people understand. Does that surprise you?
No, it doesn't. People like Will are unique because they've got service in national security realm, and so it's interesting. Hey, I'll tell you one White House correspondence related story because this is, of course, the 6-year anniversary of the Bin Laden operation.
Right.
On May 1st, 2011 was, of course, when the operation was conducted. The correspondence dinner was going to be there the night before, and everybody kind of knows the story that Secretary Clinton kind of said, don't let the Washington social calendar dictate the night of the event. But I will tell you, Admiral McRaven, who ran the operation, he selected the night, whether it was Saturday night or Sunday night. And I remember I was on the phone call when he called Director Leon Panetta at the CIA and said, we're going to do this Sunday night. And he wasn't explicit about it. He cited weather. But I know in his mind, because I've talked to him about it, he was worried about doing the operation on the night when the President, the Secretary of Defense, the CIA Director were all going to be in the Washington Hilton. It would not have worked. It really was critical
and the President canceling at the last minute.
It would have been awful for the President to walk out had something gone down, had our guys been pinned down and they had to call Pakistan.
Right.
There were so many operational contingencies that required the senior leadership of the country to be involved. that it was just an impossibility to do on the night of the 30th. And so Secretary Clinton is undoubtedly right. Military operations will never be dictated by the social calendar. But in this case, Admiral McRaven made the call to move it to Sunday night.
Right. It's a clever call.
And for those of us who were at that dinner, many of us were, it's still a harrowing moment to think everyone in that room who we were near knew and we didn't. And that reminds you that secrets can be kept.
Absolutely.
Operational security does matter. And really big things can happen when the patina of normality is everywhere to be seen.
Well, just and to give you context, Panetta was briefed on the two brothers who followed the couriers who went to that compound in Abbottabad on August 27, 2010. The operation didn't happen until May 1st. All those months, the secret was kept.
Right. You know, the interesting thing here is we both write about the presidency.
Yes.
Think about the ability to compartmentalize in the mind of the president. He's going about to do the biggest, most dangerous thing that could
ever
be done, and he's up there telling jokes.
Yeah.
And he's got the ability to separate out. That's a rare skill. Actually.
Jeremy, before we let you go, the state of the intelligence community, you implied it's a little rattled still. How important is that for our country that it operate with a sense of confidence and a sense of directness with the principal, the President of the United States?
Yeah, it's been a rough time. The WikiLeaks thing was also a very tough incident recently, but they need to know that the first customer trusts them.
Right.
That's their stock in trade. When they don't have the confidence of the boss, they're not going to step up. People aren't going to serve, and they're part of our first line of defense, and we need them to defend the country. So God bless them, for every one of them who are serving at this hour in tough places. And we need the president and his senior team to listen to them and heed their advice.
Jeremy Bash, a longtime government servant and someone who works for some other network I've barely heard of. Anyway,
it's
thank
a
you
a local
for joining
television
us.
Station.
Yeah, I think so. Channel 4, I think, is what it is.
That's right.
Thanks for joining us. So we have now coming to the open mic. Somebody I know.
He's
pretty darn well.
I remember him from the past.
I pretty darn well.
Wait.
So this is your IQ test, Josh Earnest. If you
These
can put those earbuds in and one try, you'll get $75 from Steve Shigaris's bank account.
We're not stealing you from another network, are we?
Probably.
You're not signed with another network. Because
we stole him from NBC.
So, Josh, you got to eat the microphone. Baby.
Okay.
You got to eat the microphone.
I'll dig it.
You're an Arthur Bryan.
I hope you're a free agent. You're a free agent.
We're safe. No, man. I'm with Jeremy.
I ate the microphone.
We got another NBC guy.
Another NBCer.
Oh, man. We're in so much trouble.
That's just Seer. That's just a Seer.
Okay.
Okay.
Good.
All right.
Excellent.
We're going to blip out the first two initials. Okay?
There you go.
Josh Earnest, great to see you. Haven't seen you in a while.
It's nice to see you,
he
too.
Looks,
you
know? He looks healthy and rested.
You do look a little rested.
Well, I'm trying to be.
Do you watch the briefings?
Not regularly.
Right. Why?
Well, it's just a different thing now.
Or is it ever?
It is just a different thing.
What? Could you go into that a little bit more when you say it's a different thing? I don't want to. You don't have to talk in euphemism anymore.
Well, I sort of do, but it's just the it's sort of like there are times where it's hard to look at pictures from high school. Like, you have good memories. They seem better in your memory than they do in real life. So you'd rather just keep the memory as opposed to have the whole thing eradicated by turning on television.
Wow. Right. So
this is a really emotionally vulnerable podcast.
It is.
Yes,
a little bit.
Right? We have a lot of
it's very touchy feely here.
Yeah,
right?
Very, very. We get to a lot of different psychological levels here at the Takeout podcast. And you hang around here a minute, 5 or 10 more minutes. We're all going to talk about Jungian philosophy and everything.
Wow, no, this is deep. We go deep here.
So, Josh, at any level,
I've been looking for an exit, but I'm going to stick around.
At any level,
there you go.
For the psychoanalysis portion.
Now you're sucked in.
At any level,
now that Earnest is on the couch,
exactly. At any level, spiritual, psychological, metaphysical, do you sympathize with Sean Spicer?
I do from the standpoint that one thing that he has to deal with, well, there are probably several things that he had to deal with that I never had to deal with, but at least one of them is anonymous backbiting from his colleagues.
Yeah.
Which is, that job is hard enough if you don't have people who are supposed to be on your team trashing you publicly.
Yeah.
Well, and the other thing is, his boss is watching him as if he's a contestant on a reality TV show called How to Be a Press Secretary.
That's certainly true.
That's a lot of pressure. That's a lot of additional
And giving
pressure.
Him probably, you know...
Pointers.
Yeah.
Pointers.
And, you know, minute-by-minute grades. It's almost like he's dial testing.
Yeah. But on that note, I mean, as somebody who's now on the outside, but having done that job, what do you see or what do you envision the dynamics are there for somebody like Sean that's different than what you had to deal with?
Well, I mean, there are several things that are different than what I had to deal with. The first is I had a boss who cared a whole lot about the truth and facts and evidence. You know, he was famously rational to a fault.
Professorial, you've read that once or twice.
Professorial,
once or twice.
Spock-like. We could go on and on.
Please do.
No, go on. Yeah, go on. This is very fascinating.
The other part of it is, I wouldn't say that President Obama liked being criticized, but he could handle a little criticism. And obviously, the current president is famously thin-skinned. There is also a healthy respect that President Obama had for journalists. And the role that independent journalism plays in our democracy that is not shared by the current occupant of the Oval Office.
All right,
so there are lots of ways in which what he does is different. The other thing is that when President Obama offered me this job, he sat me down, you know, they offered me the job of press secretary. He sat me down in the Oval Office. And the first thing he told me after he offered me the job was, I'm not going to watch your briefings. Now, some of that is because he
was
had
that
better...
a relief to you?
Yes. And I think he wanted it to be a relief to me, right? He didn't want me to constantly
have his voice.
The president
is going to watch.
Voice.
You might as well do it, right? that time is valuable. You might as well be out
there. That's
now.
The other thing. He's the president of the United States.
That's why they hire a guy.
He
to
should
do
have
it.
Better things to do than to watch the daily briefing.
Right, yeah.
So,
one thing I want to say, because it's a sore point for the journalists involved at the time, and whether these cases were inherited or not, it was still the choice of the Justice Department under the president. James Risen and James Rosen would disagree with you about the Obama administration's relationship to a free press and reporters doing their job in a way they believe was in full compliance with the First Amendment and as they understood giving information to a free people.
Well, what I will say is that certainly in the aftermath of the James Rosen situation, there were some much-needed reforms that were put in place where you had officials at the Justice Department working closely with journalists to try and figure out how can we institute some reforms to make sure that the legitimate concerns that you've raised are addressed in the future? Mm-hmm. So that's the kind of give and take and back and forth that doesn't mean we're always going to agree, but does demonstrate some basic level of respect that the administration had for journalists, even if we're being held to account by them.
And before we let you go, and we thank you very much for joining us at Open Mic Night of the White House Correspondents Association dinner pre-party with The Atlantic and CBS News.
That was a lot of words.
That was a lot of words.
That was a lot of words.
I'm so tired. I'm out of breath. I'm totally out of breath.
There was no script.
I will make some observation.
I'm glad you jumped in, Jeff. You're so good.
No, that was a lot.
President Obama had his first event. Should the country expect to see him more? And should Democrats expect him to get a little bit off the couch, as we were talking, and be a little bit more aggressive about what he sees happening, not only his country, but his agenda? Or his legacy?
Yeah, to answer that question as concisely as possible, no. The president wants to leave space.
Okay.
We are going to need other Democrats to step forward, whether that is congressional leaders, whether that
or
is
somebody else.
Elected officials across. It's going to be multiple people, right? Multiple somebodies who need to assume that responsibility. If Democrats are in a situation in 2018 where the leading voice of our party is the former president of the United States, we're going to have some trouble.
There's news right there. Thank you for that, Josh Earnest.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you, Josh.
Nice to see you guys. I will say that if we're going to get this dressed up, we should do this on camera.
I agree.
We're live streaming this. We forgot to tell you.
There you go.
All
good
right.
to see you,
but
Jeff.
But Josh, as you know, I never do anything on camera.
I was going to say, he's so shy about it. You're so shy about it.
I hate cameras.
He doesn't like it.
So we're done?
Okay.
We're done? This thing you keep doing to your neck, Shaggy, are we done? So you keep cutting your neck.
I like that you call him Shaggy.
Goldberg, man.
Thank you. This is fun.
You are the next best podcast sidekick.
He's
the best.
All right.
You're the next
best.
We got some work to do, Jeff.
Because you know why?
Wait, I've been promoted from editor-in-chief to
next
second tier podcast sidekick.
Trust me.
I can retire now.
Exactly.
Trust me.
Put that on your business card.
Boys, this has
been
fun. Thanks very much.
Thanks, my brother.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thanks
a lot.
We are done. This is the White House Correspondents' Dinner pre-party, CBS News, Atlantic Media. I'm Major Garrett with the world's greatest podcast sidekick, Steve Shigaris. Steve, I thank you.
Thank you, Major.
Goodbye.
The Takeout is produced by Arden Farhi, Nick Feynman, and CBS Radio News. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter, and visit takeoutpodcast.com for more information.
That was good.